Did Bill Armstrong finally hear my pleas for bringing up Josh Doan? They finally listened. They called up the young stud forward yesterday. It looks as if he'll make his NHL debut tonight. Coyotes host the Columbus Blue Jackets. Did not think that March 26th I would be opening up a hockey show as we're in our playoff push with Arizona Coyotes hosting the Columbus Blue Jackets. However, the fact that Josh Doan is getting this opportunity, I've been calling for it for weeks now. Long overdue. It's going to be really, really cool. First Arizona born and raised and trained player to make his debut with the Coyotes. He's also the first player who played at Arizona State University, then with the Tucson Roadrunners of the AHL, and now with the Arizona Coyotes of the NHL. That's awesome. I love it. Son of Shane Doan, obviously. Coyotes legend. Current Maple Leafs vice president. And he's going to make his way down to the game, too. Should be a really special moment. That is a game that I am probably going to have my eyes glued to for a little bit. Maybe even predicting a goal here from Josh Doan. 12 games on the board here in the NHL. We're going to bring on Nathan Scheibe in a little bit here. Talk a little bit about the playoff race. Some playoff clinching scenarios. We did not get a Vancouver Canucks clinch last night. Oh, we were oh so close. We did not get that. We have a few clinching scenarios today. Marty St. Louis is also going to return behind the bench for the Montreal Canadiens tonight as they visit the Colorado Avalanche at Ball Arena. He took an absence for an injury with his son that was sustained in a hockey game. His 16-year-old son, Mason, playing for the U15 Mid-Fairfield hockey team in Connecticut, was hospitalized a week later from complications from the injury. Glad that everything is now stable and to a point where Marty St. Louis is able to make his return behind the Canadiens bench. Trevor Letowski took over and his absence went 1-2-1. So I'm sure that return will provide a spark for the Canadiens tonight. They will see if they can hold Nathan MacKinnon off the board at home tonight, which has been an impossible task for any team that has entered Ball Arena so far this season. We'll see how that goes. So we have a few playoff clinching scenarios tonight. The Rangers, the Panthers, the Hurricanes, and the Boston Bruins could all clinch playoff berths. They could all punch their tickets to the postseason tonight. I will run down those for you while Raven brings on Nathan. We're also going to bring on Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period. He is the LA chapter chair for the Professional Hockey Writers Association. And we're going to look forward to talking the Kings there. That is one of the more interesting teams in the National Hockey League, in my opinion, right now. He is also a host for Sirius XM NHL Radio. So our playoff clinching scenarios, the New York Rangers will clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Philadelphia Flyers in any fashion, or if they get a point and the Red Wings lose to the Capitals in any fashion. The Florida Panthers will clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Boston Bruins in any fashion, and if any of the following occurs, the Red Wings lose to the Capitals in any fashion, the Flyers lose to the Rangers in regulation, the Flyers lose to the Rangers in overtime or a shootout, and the Capitals lose to the Red Wings in regulation. That is a lot there, but that is how the Panthers will clinch, or if they get a point and the Red Wings lose to the Caps in regulation. The Hurricanes, however, will clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Penguins in any fashion, and if any of the following occurs, Red Wings losing to the Caps, Flyers lose to the Rangers in regulation, the Flyers lose to the Rangers in overtime in a shootout, and the Capitals lose to the Red Wings in regulation, or if they get a point and the Red Wings lose to the Caps in regulation. Oh boy. Bruins will clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Panthers in any fashion and the Red Wings lose to the Caps in regulation. Those are our playoff clinching scenarios tonight. We'll also see the Bruins take on the Florida Panthers tonight in what should be a real doozy. We have Nathan Scheibe on the line. How's it going today, Nathan?
I'm doing well, Tassos. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us, my friend. Really appreciate you being on the program today. Look forward to talking a little hockey with you. We were just going over playoff clinching scenarios, and our first opportunity for such a thing came yesterday with the Vancouver Canucks. They were oh so close, but they fall to the Los Angeles Kings 3-2. But I wanted to ask you first about the Canucks. They could have been the first team to clinch. Is this a legitimate contender in your eyes, or are there some other teams? Obviously, we're going to dig into some of the other teams, but what do you make of Vancouver as being, you know, it seems like they're going to really run away with the Pacific here. That much is known, but what do you make of the Canucks as legitimate contenders?
I definitely think they're in contention for the Stanley Cup. However, I just think with this group having not been in the playoffs, like Vancouver hasn't been in the regular playoffs since 2015, and they were in the bubble playoffs in 2020. And since those 2 years, obviously a lot of turnover has happened. And I think this team, as it's currently constructed, parallels the 2008-2009 Chicago Blackhawks, where they had a breakout season. No one was expecting this from the Canucks, and no one was expecting the season that the 09 Blackhawks had. And they did well in the playoffs. They made a run to the conference final and ran into the Detroit Red Wings. I feel like something similar might happen to the Canucks because this group has a lot of young players, although most of them are established. You get the Pettersons, the Millers, and Miller has been on playoff runs before. You get the Bessers, the Quinn Hugheses. But I just think that this, since because of this team has a little bit of a lack of playoff experience, I do think they are contenders, but they might hit that wall, especially maybe in early on in like the game one or game two, especially if they're playing someone like Vegas. With that being said, though, they are an excellent team, and it will be very interesting to see come playoff time what happens.
Who right now for you is a bar none contender, and who might you think be thinking maybe is a little bit fraudulent right now? Maybe a team that is shooting above their weight right now, or you know, maybe a Cinderella kind of unraveling once we get to the playoffs?
Well, as far as contenders go, you got the obvious ones like Florida and Colorado. Those are probably the two scariest teams for me, and Carolina would probably follow closely behind. The only thing I worry about with Carolina, and it's been talked about a lot in many hockey circles, is their scoring and the risk of that drying up, especially in the conference finals like last year. But I do feel like the additions of Kuznetsov, giving him a fresh start, and he seems to be thriving. With Gensel, I think he already has like 9 assists. He's on a tear with Hurricanes. Seth Jarvis, we've really seen him break out, and I think he's at 30 goals right now. But Carolina, Colorado, Florida are all looking very scary, and Florida's actually scoring a lot less goals than expected. I think it's like 30 less goals than they're expected. So that's kind of scary, given how their offense already is pretty dominant. Those three teams are probably, I would say, are my favorites. And as far as maybe a Cinderella run, I think you look in the East. There are two teams that I'm kind of looking at, just kind of one, no one was expecting the Flyers to be here, right? And obviously Tortorella's coaching has been amazing, and no one's expected the Flyers to be this far along in their process. And I just think, especially because their team is also very young, like I mentioned with the Canucks, they might not have the experience to handle the adverse situations of playoff hockey. There are a few veterans on that team that have been in the playoffs, but I just don't think that they can sustain it, even though they've done it all season long. So we'll see what happens when we get to the playoffs for the Flyers. And the other team I wanted to highlight is maybe on a Cinderella run is the Capitals. Now, however, if the Capitals can make it in, they have a plethora of guys who are on that 2018 team still, and they have a number of guys who have been on long playoff runs in general, combined with an influx of younger guys like Connor McMichael, Alexi Protas, Beck Malenstein, just to name a few. That Washington might be an interesting team if they sneak in, because they've been playing playoff hockey for a month now. And if they sneak in, we could see what Florida did last year happened to the Washington Capitals as well this year.
See, Washington's an interesting one. First of all, you mentioned Jake Gensel. He's been tremendous with the Carolina Hurricanes. He will make his return to Pittsburgh tonight. That should be pretty interesting. And we'll get to the Penguins in a second. But you mentioned the Capitals first, and you know, everybody's pointing to this goal differential right now. If they were to make the playoffs with the goal differential they have, it would be the worst goal differential in the salary cap era of a team that made the playoffs. I could see it. I understand the point of them playing playoff hockey for so long. I just think that it's a bit of an older squad. You know, a lot of those guys that you mentioned from that 2018 team, they're on the wrong side of 30. Oshie, Ovechkin, obviously Tom Wilson, John Carlson, but we'll see about it. We'll see how it goes. I don't know that maybe if those guys really have any staying power, but if Charlie Lindgren can continue to kick the way he has, then I think it definitely could happen, but it would definitely catch a lot of people, myself included, by surprise. So including the Capitals and Philly and all this, how do you personally sort through all this chaos that is the Eastern Conference wild card playoff picture right now? You know, the third spot in the Metro is still up for grabs. Seems as if two of the three of Washington, Philly, and Detroit are going to make the playoffs. Seems like, you know, other than the Capitals a little bit, you know, some of these teams are playing like they don't even want it, right? So how do you sort through all that? And obviously you have some teams like the Islanders and the Devils. The Devils have been hot lately. They'll take on the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. But how do you sort through that? Are those two teams that I mentioned, the Islanders and the Devils, are they out of it right now? And is it, you know, like I said, two spots for those three teams?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying, especially with the two spots and the three teams. I definitely feel like one of Washington or Detroit or Philly are going to occupy two of those spots. I think the safest bet would be Philly, just because of how consistent they've been all season. The Wings and the Capitals especially have been up and down, especially recently. But it's like weird. We had the race in the Western Conference last year where no team really wanted to grab that final spot. And now we're seeing that in the East this year. The Islanders were looking strong earlier. They had a 6-game winning streak, and then they lost, I think, 6 in a row, and now they're kind of backing out. The Devils, you're right, have been hot, so it will be interesting to see if they can sneak their way in, but they have a couple teams they need to jump over. And Detroit is still hanging around there as well. I mean, they've been lucky to get Dylan Larkin back from injury. He scored 2 goals in his return, and that was nice to see. It kind of rejuvenated the team and gave them a little more confidence. And they're sitting 1 point out right now, and they play the Capitals tonight, which that's going to be the game in the night material for me at least. So I'm excited to see that. But it's been so awesome to have all these playoff implications. We've had these games for like a month now, and there's just so many teams that can make it. It's hard. Like on any given day, you could say, oh, this team will do it, and then make an argument for a different team. So having we still have 10 games, 11 games per team on average, and coming down the stretch, it's going to be really fascinating.
What do you make of what's happening in Pittsburgh right now? Obviously, it has not been the season that everybody expected when they brought in Erik Karlsson, traded a first-round pick to the San Jose Sharks. That, you know, that pick could end up being this year. It's top 10 protected, but if they decide to keep the pick this year, they have to give the pick up next year, regardless of what happens. You'd imagine if that pick is inside the top 10 that they would hang on to it in the hopes that they are better next season. I can't envision Kyle Dubas going full on tank until there is some clarity maybe, or some resolve, I guess, to the Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang situation. You know, we've heard noise that they could even look to move on from Erik Karlsson as soon as this offseason. You know, we've heard Ottawa is a potential destination for a return for Erik Karlsson. Just what are your thoughts on this Pittsburgh team, where this could be, where they're headed and all that?
Yeah, Pittsburgh is kind of an interesting anomaly, as in they are, I feel like they've been one up, one down for a while. They look like they won it that one game a couple weeks ago where they handily beat Detroit. And then they lost the next game. But I do feel like as long as the core of Crosby, Malkin, Letang are there and they want to be in Pittsburgh, Dubas is going to try his best to keep the team competitive. And I feel like we always talk about how the Caps and the Pens are tied at the hip because of Ovi and Crosby. But it's interesting how Washington's been on their way up this season and Pittsburgh's been on their way down. I feel just because, especially with that pick they traded away, because they bought it. They got Erik Karlsson at his highest value, so they had to pay the most price. And now, arguably, it's at a lot less value because his point totals haven't been there. And it's partly because of the different system, obviously. But playing, we saw this in San Jose when he was playing with Brent Burns. Because Karlsson wasn't the guy in all situations, he wasn't getting the right amount of playing time, or maybe that the right amount of situations that he needs to thrive. Like we saw that once Burns got traded to Carolina. Once that happened, Karlsson was able to take the reins, and we saw a 100-point explosion. Now he's not even at half. He'll hit probably half of that this year, but his value isn't going to be nearly as high if Pittsburgh does decide to move on from Erik Karlsson. And they probably won't get a first-round pick, especially because now Carlson's another year older, and that contract is still out there, even if the Penguins do retain. And just a lot of guys overall have had down years. This offseason is going to be very fascinating for them, but it remains to be seen if they can maybe string some wins together, but their playoff chances are very slim. So this,
they're not making the playoffs. They're not making the playoffs.
This offseason is going to be extremely fascinating for the Penguins, and I feel like it's going to be pivotal on what Dubas decides to do this summer. Whatever he decides to do is going to change the direction of this team for the next decade or so. It's going to be, he's got a lot of tough decisions to make this summer, and I feel like these next few months are going to be the most important of his entire general managing career in the NHL.
Would you hang on to the pick in the hopes that you're going to be better next year, or would you give the pick to the Sharks in anticipation that things are not going to get better anytime soon in Pittsburgh?
As an optimist, I would want to keep the pick, but if I'm looking at it as a realism point of view, they might be the same, if not worse, next year, just because, unless they make a massive shift because of the age factor. Everyone's going to be a year older. We see Riley Smith. He hasn't had Pittsburgh hasn't found the return on Riley Smith they were hoping for. They've had injury issues. I would say they would get worse. But it remains to be seen. The NHL is so different every single year. So we'll see what Dubas decides to do. But I don't think, as the roster is currently constituted, and if he doesn't make any massive decisions or massive trades, then I don't think this roster will get better for, next year.
Nathan, you're one of my go-to guys when it comes to talking about the American Hockey League. I personally, on this program, have been vouching for the call-up and subsequent debut of Josh Doan for a little bit now. We finally got that call-up yesterday. He will make his NHL debut tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think the next player on my radar for vouching for a call-up for them, it's Akil Thomas. That spin around the goal on the weekend was sick. This is a guy who's been knocking at the door for quite some time now, hasn't gotten the opportunity of a game yet with the Los Angeles Kings. We saw, you know, Jameson Reese was moved from the team you are employed by to the Belleville Senators, looking for a bit more of an opportunity. I was always really high on him. Really nice guy as well, too. Whether it is the Wolves or another club, who is the guy we should be talking about as far as a guy who should be getting an opportunity in the National Hockey League that hasn't yet?
Well, I think you mentioned Josh Doan. I'm very excited to see him tonight. He's one of the players I've seen in person play with the Wolves, and he was always a constant scoring threat, so I'm glad he got the call up there. But one player I want to highlight is in the Dallas organization, that is Maverick Bork. Him and Logan Stankoven were tearing it up in Texas before Stankoven got called up. And now I would love to see Dallas is already an extremely deep team, and the chemistry between Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven has been amazing. It's been amazing to watch, and it's been great to see Stankoven stick with the Stars. But I would love to see how the chemistry between the three of them, Johnston, Maverick Bork, and Stankoven, at the NHL level. Because Maverick Bork and Stankoven were 1 and 2 in American Hockey League scoring. And I would love to see how Bork and that conglomeration of that line, if not someone else, how they would fare at the NHL level. It's been fascinating to see his development over the past few years, watching the Stars play the Wolves as many times as they have. And then another player I can't wait to see, that he plays for the Rockford IceHogs currently, and that's Ethan Del Mastro.
Good pick.
He's an AHL All-Star this year. He's one of the Hawks' top defensive prospects. He's been playing a lot with Nolan Allen, who was the Blackhawks' first-round pick a couple of years ago. But I'm glad to see, I don't think he'll come up this year just because of Rockford and their playoff push. And the Hawks are still, they're getting more guys back off of injured reserve. Connor Murphy was actually skating the other day before practice with Taylor Hall. So that was good. But Ethan Del Mastro, he's a solid two-way defenseman. He can put up offense. He can block shots. He's a big body. He does it all. So I'd be really interested to see next year, especially if he can make the Hawks opening night roster with Nolan Allen and the chemistry they've developed in the AHL, how that can translate to the NHL, because the Blackhawks are going to have, as the roster looks now, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be wildly different, because a lot of guys who have been abiding their time in the AHL, like an Isaac Phillips, who I've loved the development of as well. Isaac Phillips, Nolan Allen, Ethan Domastro, all three players are going to basically follow kind of how Alex Vlasic did, how he was in the AHL for a year and a little bit, and he came up to the NHL, and he's been one of the Hawks' best defensemen this year. So it'll be interesting. The Hawks have a good deep core prospect pool. So with them, Maverick Bourque, Josh Stone, there's a lot of good players, and Akil Thomas, like you mentioned, a lot of good players in the AHL that are just knocking on the door. And we even saw how Alex Nylander was playing in the AHL, and he gets traded to Columbus, and he exploded for a bunch of goals. So it's, the AHL is such a great league, and I'm so happy and excited for these players that are getting their chances and that will get their chance to make an impact.
A lot of really good names. I think Dallas Stars fans are drooling at the prospect of a Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankov, and Maverick Bourque line. That would be awesome. And the Hawks defense, you know, everybody I talked to in the city, it's a rebuild. We all know that. There's going to be a lot of pain. It should come with the price of, or with the reward of, a high pick this summer at the draft. Hawks have two first rounders as well, but you know, I think everybody's really content with where the defense is at, with the development of a lot of these prospects. And Ethan Delmastro is a great name to pull. So hopefully we'll get to see them up in the NHL with the Hawks soon. Two more for you here. And the first one is about the Norris Trophy race. For a majority of the season, it looked like Quinn Hughes was running away with it. That still might be the case in a lot of people's eyes, especially a lot of the voters, too. You know, they may have just, you know, closed the book on that award and said, hey, you know what, this is Quinn Hughes' year. But players like Cale Makar have obviously, you know, asserted themselves in that conversation. Roman Josi especially has this year, too. A lot of people want to put Evan Bouchard in that list. I don't know that I would necessarily have him in my Norris, on my Norris ballot right now. Still makes some mistakes on the defensive side of things that, you know, for me, keep him out of that top echelon of defensemen. But what do you make of the Norris race right now, and how do you see it shaking out?
It's definitely a lot different than last year, because last year we saw Erik Karlsson run away with the points, and that was pretty easy compared to most years. But this year, we really don't have anyone running away with points. Quinn Hughes leads all defensemen with 80, but Makar's close. You had Dobson, Bouchard, Josi, they're all very close in points. Even the top 10 are all within 20 points of each other, I believe. And Fox is in there as well, playing 10 less games because of injury. But I want to go a little off the board and highlight a name in Rasmus Dahlin. Because the Sabres haven't had the success that many were hoping for this year, I don't think he gets a lot of love for the Norris this year. But his numbers, the amount of time on ice he spends, combined with all of his blocks, his hits, his takeaways, he does it all for the Sabres. And now with the addition of Byram, he can relax a little bit. But he does – I think he's leading all defensemen at least – most of them in hits. He's got over 160 hits. He's got over 100 blocks. He still has over 50 points, and he's only a minus five on a Buffalo team who hasn't had the greatest defensive structure this year compared to last year. But I do believe the top two right now are Hughes and Makar in either order. And I would throw Josi in there as well, and even Hedman. Hedman has been great this year, especially on a Tampa team that didn't have Vasilevsky to start the year. They lost Sergachev after breaking his leg in that horrific injury. But Hedman has carried a lot of the load for Tampa, and I don't think he's getting enough credit this year, especially because his offense has returned, even at his age, I believe, of 33 now. But I think it's between Hughes and Makar, especially with Hughes' hot start to the season. But I do feel like that the Norris is contending towards which defenseman has the highest amount of points. So personally, I would love to see an award that highlights a defensive defenseman, like a Rod Langway Award or something like that, along those lines, to highlight defensemen who don't get the points. But I do feel like, for me, the top three, if I had a vote, would be Makar, Hughes, and Rasmus Dahlin in any order, just because of as aforementioned great seasons statistically that McCarr and Hughes are having. And then although Dahlin doesn't have the same amount of counting stats as Hughes and McCarr do on the offensive side, defensively, he has been great. And one more important thing I want to highlight with McCarr that might give him the edge is his giveaway-takeaway ratio. I believe it's a plus 40. He's taken the puck away more times than he's given it away, which shows how much poise he has. And compare that to someone like Evan Bouchard, who has, I believe, 60 upper 60s in takeaways and doesn't have a lot in giveaways, not a lot of takeaways. And especially a lot of those giveaways have been in the defensive zone. So I think that might hurt him in the race. So it's definitely fascinating. I feel like the top end defensemen have come such a long way, and there's so many great defensemen. You really can't go wrong with any of those names, I believe, that we both have mentioned.
Nathan, you and I could talk for a really long time. You definitely piqued my interest when you said Rod Langway Award. I would love something like that, a bit to distinguish defensive defenseman and, you know, a point-producing defenseman. You know, I think you and I need to do some deep dives one day on the defense position. You know, are we seeing more of a Rover situation these, you know, as the years go on and as these guys become more offensively inclined and skilled? You and I could dig deep for hours, and we're definitely gonna have to bring you back on later on in the year or in the playoffs to even talk some prospects and stuff like that. But we are bringing on Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period SiriusXM NHL in a little bit. He covers the Los Angeles Kings. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the Kings here. Do you have a few words about that team that plays out of crypto.com arena?
The Kings have definitely been an interesting team to watch over the year, the ups, the downs. They had the record to start with the road wins at the start of the season. They fell off, and now they're on their way back up. But their style of play, like if you had to describe it with one word, I think it would be suffocating. I was watching their game against the Canucks last night, and in the first period it was mentioned how the Kings will score a goal, and then they'll just shut you down. It's kind of like the old trap that's coming back, but their style is so structured, so rigid, and it's been working for them as they are occupying the third spot in the Pacific. So it would be interesting to see, especially if, because their style contrasts the Oilers perfectly, because you have the Oilers is obviously dominated by the offense and McDavid, Draisaitl, Bouchard, all of those guys, and then you have the defensively minded Kings when you have Kopitar and Philip Deneau, two perennial Selke contenders. It would be interesting for a third straight year to see them, if that's the case, against the Oilers in the playoffs. But I do want to highlight Quinton Byfield, his development. I would argue he's one of the most improved players this year, aside, along with Juraj Slafkovský, his two of the most improved. Like the way he plays, I consider him like he plays violently. That's how I describe it. Like not necessarily throwing the biggest hits, but he plays like he wants the puck more than everyone else. And those highlight reel goals obviously speak for themselves, but it's been great to see his development. Laferriere, I'm glad to see him stick with the team, hardworking forward. He is a playoff player. And if the Kings go on a run and I feel like he's a prime candidate for scoring that overtime goal that wins the series, that people are going to be like, oh, Laferriere did that back in 2024. And like, yep, that was him. And then it's been, they basically did nothing at the trade deadline. And however, they did get Arvidsson back off of LTIR. So that was kind of like they're getting that free agent or their rental at the deadline. And with his peak years in Nashville scoring 30 goals, he's obviously going to help bolster that lineup. And the return of Mikey Anderson has been good as well. Excellent shutdown defenseman to play with Doughty. And then the goaltending, even though we thought Riddick and Talbot might not be the best tandem at the beginning of the season, they played great. They've had their ups and downs, of course, but by and large, the Kings are, I wouldn't want to put them in the first round. I mean, Edmonton is well-versed in playing with them over the past few years. They might know a little bit better than we do, but I wouldn't want to play the Kings in the first round, that's for sure.
Nathan, you're great. I was just writing all that down to get us ready for our interview with Dennis in a few minutes here, but thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us. We're going to bring you back on again soon. Have a good rest of your day, my man.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
That is Nathan Scheibe. He's awesome, isn't he? I mean, just knows a lot about hockey, really, you know, sees the game. He and I see the game very similarly, so I really enjoy bringing him on every time we get the opportunity to do so. Just watches a lot of hockey, has a good head on his shoulders as far as, you know, sports, hockey. It's a lot about perspective. It's a lot about how you view things, not just the, you know, the actual game, but the lens sometimes that you view things. So I really appreciate Nathan's perspective on the game of hockey and his take on some of these players and some of these teams. He knows how to watch the game. So we thank him for joining us. We are going to bring on Dennis Bernstein here in a few minutes. Just fair enough, a quick text here. But I did want to mention that our guy, I was going to mention this yesterday, but Josh Hosang, who we brought on a few games ago, a few games ago for him now, but he scored his first goal on the weekend. That was awesome for him. Also had an assist in that game for 2 points. He has 2 points in his first three games with the Florida Everblades. So, you know, shout out to Josh for that. That was a nice tuck. And, you know, well, he should play a big role in the Florida Everblades lineup the rest of the season. And yeah, sorry here, everybody. We're really looking forward to bringing on Dennis Bernstein, though. And just, I love Nathan's takes. I can't get enough of that. That's very fun. You know, you mention one thing and he could bring up 10 different things and they're all relevant and they all fit. And, you know, I really just enjoy hearing his perspectives on the game. Very refreshing. Nothing stale from Nathan. He mentioned that we were talking about the Norris Trophy race and, you know, I agree with him that there's, you know, the Hughes and the McCarr situation up at the top there. But, you know, Roman Josi, everybody, is really asserting himself into that conversation. I heard an interesting point yesterday. I think it was by Jeff Merrick. But, you know, could Roman Josi win the Hart Trophy but not the Norris? Debate amongst yourselves. I think that could be a very, very interesting take. I don't know that would actually happen. You know, to win the most valuable player, but not the best defenseman award, to not win the best at your position award, that would be kind of a tough sell for me. But could happen. You never know. And, you know, just talking about the AHL too, some of these guys, you know, I don't mean to do a little overkill on the Josh Stone thing, but one, you know, just the whole state of the Arizona Coyotes franchise right now, it really looks like as if they're going to play in Arizona next season, regardless of what happens with the land auction deal. And if that goes through or not, you know, the NHL wants to give the Coyotes the benefit of the doubt and, owner Alex Morello, the benefit of the doubt as far as, just giving them a shake, even though a lot of people would argue that they've gotten a fair shake and that it's time to, find a permanent solution to this issue. They're going to give them time, and that relocation to another city this summer after that would be kind of a tough move. It would be kind of a quick turnaround. So I understand that, but, you know, in the wake of the possibility that this team could not be in Arizona at the start of next season, even if the percentage is at 5%, how do you not call up the son of a legend and someone that grew up in your state, cheering for your team, interacting with the fan base, going to Arizona State, being the captain, scoring the first goal at the Mullet Arena? How do you not give that kid a call up, especially when he's tearing up the American Hockey League the way he has with Tucson? So that has been my point there. And I will be transitioning now to Akil Thomas. He needs to get a call up with the Kings. I know the Kings are very deep. Maybe we'll mention that with Dennis Bernstein here in a few moments. But that goal, oh my gosh, against the Calgary Wranglers in overtime, just sick. A nice stretch pass from Brad Clark and, you know, pulls off the Patty Kane spinorama, fire on the backhand. Just ridiculous stuff from Akil Thomas. That kid's got a lot of skill. We remember him scoring a hat trick in the preseason. A lot of people thought that that would solidify at least a couple games of a spot in the Los Angeles Kings lineup. It was not meant to be. So we await the National Hockey League debut of Akil Thomas. Just a few news and notes here. We could see a few guys hit 100 points tonight. The New York Rangers or Timmy Panarin could be a 100-point man by the end of the night. So could David Pastrnak of the Boston Bruins. Those two sit at 99 points. And would anybody be surprised if Mikko Rantanen, he's 4 points back of 100 right now, sitting at 96, but You know, the Avalanche host the Montreal Canadiens tonight. We all know what position the Montreal Canadiens are in. Mikko Rantanen is one of those guys that can quietly put up a four-point night and really fly under the radar still as far as performances go. Would anybody be surprised if he put up 1-3 tonight to hit 100? I would not be. So we have currently three 100-plus point scorers in the NHL. That is Nikita Kucherov, Nathan MacKinnon, and some guy named Connor McDavid. But we could have as many as another three join that club as soon as tonight. Mentioned that the playoff clinching scenarios as well. Rangers, Panthers, Canes, and the Bruins could clinch tonight. So that is just some fun stuff to keep in mind. A few news and notes here before we bring on Dennis Bernstein. The Minnesota Wild have signed Jack Peart, I think. Am I correct here? Was it the Minnesota Wild? Yeah, it was the Minnesota Wild. They signed Jack Peart. I got to see Jack Peart live. His team was playing, oh boy, who was his team on? I forgot who the Chicago Steel were playing in the Clark Cup final here. That is the United States Hockey League, the top junior hockey league in the U.S. here. And that Chicago Steel team was loaded. It had Adam Fantilli. It had Josh Doan. It had a few other guys that were just really, really tremendous players. And that was a series that the Chicago Steel won. They won that Clark Cup. And, you know, I watched a 16-year-old Adam Fantilli just fire a shot into the back of the net. And he was one of the youngest players on the ice. And I said, wow, that kid is going to be something else. I had heard of him, but to see it in competition amongst his age group or even, you know, guys who are a little bit older than him was very impressive. But the guy on the other end of the ice that impressed me the most was Jack Peart. You could tell that this kid was all over it, was really just leading his team. Can you look up what junior team this guy, or no, I won't make Raven do that. He's about to give Dennis Bernstein a call, but you know, Peart's only 20. He had 14 points in 38 games with St. Cloud this year. This kid could be a defenseman. He could be a really good defenseman on a team, you know, that has Brock Faber, who is probably, in my mind, the number two as far as the Calder Trophy race goes behind some guy named Connor Bedard, too. And I, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even be surprised. You know, I've seen a lot of Brock Faber over Connor Bedard. But, you know, Jack Peart's going to be a good defenseman. So, keep that name in mind. We will, you know.
Played for the Fargo Force.
Fargo Force. That's who it was. Okay. All right. No, I remember watching that team. You know, there's a lot of those USHL teams that are all kind of in the Midwest here. The Fargo Force against the Chicago Steel. Yes, I remember watching that game live and in person, and it was a good one. That was a good series. The Chicago Steel here are one of the preeminent, not just in the USHL, but among just junior hockey clubs in the world. You know, we all know the London Knights and some of these other teams, but Chicago Steel have done a tremendous job as far as bringing in guys and bringing in players, bringing in coaches that have moved on to the next level and, you know, really trying to foster a team of, you know, almost a factory to NHL, to the NHL, to the AHL, to NCAA. The Steel do a tremendous job. So, Minnesota Wild signed Jack Peart. Long story long. We are working to get on Dennis Bernstein now. We're going to talk a little bit of the Los Angeles Kings. It's really been an up and down season for them. So, but it seems like they're in the midst of a high right now with this club. So, very, very exciting on that front. I'm looking forward to talking about the Los Angeles Kings. I was always a fan of the Kings when they went on those cup runs, obviously. And, you know, that's hard to say in this city because, you know, the Kings for a long time were the team that the Chicago fans here despised the most. You could probably throw Vancouver into that mix as well. You could throw the Red Wings in there, even though that's kind of died off since the Red Wings joined the Eastern Conference. But those Los Angeles Kings and those Chicago Blackhawks series were some of the best hockey that we've seen over the last 15, 20 years even. So it is nice to see the Kings good. They've made it through this rebuild. Not even a rebuild, just a retool on the fly, as you could call it, over the last few years. And we are now starting to see it finally come to fruition here We mentioned Quentin Byfield. We'll mention him a bit more when we get Dennis on the line. And some of these other guys, too, have been just really excellent pieces for the Los Angeles Kings. How are we doing on him, Raven?
He is with us now.
We now welcome on Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period and the Los Angeles Kings. How's it going today, Dennis? Thank you for doing this. Sirius XM NHL Radio as well.
Oh, happy to be with you this morning. Great to talk some hockey with you.
So we were previewing you a little bit with the Kings, just mentioning that it's been kind of an up and down go for the Kings. You know, they started off so hot. You know, they had that road record. Then they had a bit of a dip. Todd McLellan was let go. But now it seems that things have, you know, been on the upswing again for them right now. Would you agree that the Kings are right now in a period of a high right now for their club?
Yeah, after the win last night here in Vancouver, I talked to Blake Lizotte about that. Basically, there's been three seasons for the Kings. You mentioned the great start, the undefeated road record that set a record, and then a really, really bad January that saw Todd McLellan being dismissed. And now in March, it's been a really good March for these guys. They're 8-3-1, four-game winning streak, and they're prime. They're, you know, unless something really catastrophic happens over the last 11 games, they're going to make the playoffs. And they're probably going to face the Edmonton Oilers for the third consecutive season. But, yeah, they're definitely on upswing. They, you know, when Jim Hiller came in and replaced Todd McLellan, the first job was to restore teams' confidence because they're a really good team. They're on pace for 100 points. They lost all their confidence. They were losing close games virtually every night. So he really instilled the confidence, and now they're starting to execute. So last night, that was a really physical battle here in Vancouver against the Canucks, who's a really good team as well. But, yeah, they're certainly going to be in the playoffs and they're going to make noise.
So Jim Hiller isn't a name that a lot of people here in Chicago know, but maybe we should know. Yeah. How has he been since taking over this club from Tom McLellan?
Well, you know, I had 4.5 years here with Tom McLellan, and, you know, I learned a lot from Todd. We had a great relationship. Todd's just a very intense guy, and there was just so much tension around the team during that losing streak. I think they won 3 games out of 17. There's just so much tension, and then he was let go at the All-Star break, which I think gave the team an ability to reset and calm things down. And Jim's a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more humorous, and he's been with the team since last season. He came over from the Islanders as an assistant coach. He runs the offense and the power play. So it was something that, you know, when you reflect on Todd, and Todd's, like I said, a great coach. I think he's won almost 600 NHL games. They needed just a fresh start, and Jim Hiller has given to him. Hasn't really changed much other than going, and he hates this question because it seems to come up every day. He's gone 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, as opposed to Todd, who really didn't really change things up much. The one thing Jim has done, in top of reinstilling confidence in the team, he switched things around. Guys are, you know, they always talk about coaches having blenders and changing up stuff. He's really changed up stuff. And, you know, and the one thing that's been consistent throughout is the Kings have the best penalty kill in the NHL right now. And, you know, you saw it last night. Vancouver's got a great power play. They went 0-for-2 on the power play. So I think it was a necessary move. You know, Rob Blake has a long history with Todd McLellan. Like he played for Todd McLellan. So it was something that he didn't want to do. I'd asked him a couple weeks before if he was considering a coaching change at midseason break, and he said no. But again, there's just too much losing for any coach to stay on board. So Hiller's done what he's needed to do, a fresh look, a fresh start, and it's so far it's worked for the Kings since he's been behind the bench.
Anze Kopitar seems refreshed. It's almost like he's 24 right now. I think Quentin Byfield seems to have provided a lot of that spark for that youthful energy within the Kings captain. What's it been like watching the connection that those two have in particular? But what have you seen from Kopitar as well?
Well, yeah, there's been no regression in Kopi's game, and he's 36 years old. I think this is his 18th season. It's just amazing that he can still play 19 minutes a night as their top center. But yeah, the growth of Quentin Byfield is a major storyline in Los Angeles this season, because last year I think he had 3 goals in 50 games, and he had some injured wrists. He was sick part of the season, but he's really emerged as a star player and certainly has given energy. And that, you know, you could discuss the most productive line over the last maybe month to 6 weeks has been the Deneau, Moore, and Fiala line. But the top line when they're going is Adrian Kempe, Anze Kopitar, and Quentin Byfield. They're big, they're physical. Quentin's really, you know, he's when he wants to, when he has the opportunity to forecheck, he's a demon on the puck. He goes, hunts the puck and goes, gets it. You know, he's 6'4", 220. He's probably still growing because he's only 21 years old. But Kopi's been great. He's been, you know, we joked the other night against, I think it was, I can't remember the team. They had, Kopi had like 4 or 6 penalty minutes all season. And the, near the end of the game, it got a little rough. So the referee decided to give everybody on the ice a 10-minute misconduct. All 10 players got 10-minute misconducts. So we joke with Kopi after the game that, you know, basically there goes your Lady Bing, because now you've got like 18 penalty minutes. But it's amazing that a player at his age with all the, you know, 1,200 points, he's, you know, he's basically been the GOAT for this team, and he still continues to be the number one center, even at 36 years old.
He's been tremendous. I think if, you know, this has been such a really nice revitalization of his career, you know, and playing with Quentin Byfield too has to be a lot of fun for him. The way they find each other has been really tremendous to watch. A name that maybe doesn't get a lot of recognition on this Kings team, maybe he does within the market, you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but at least from the outside looking in from here in Chicago, is Mikey Anderson. Really just a steady guy. Really just been, you know, he's played with Drew Doughty a lot. You know, he's been a little bit injured here and there, but talk about Mikey Anderson and maybe what everybody else should know about this guy.
Well, this is a kid who really a lot of people didn't really give much chance, because remember, back in the day, he was a 4th-round pick by the Kings. He's developed really, really well. Really good kid. Got to know him really well over the last couple of years. Just a steady presence, right? You know, he's kind of the ice that Drew Doughty's the fire, right? Drew's over-the-top personality, not afraid to speak. Now, Mikey's a great kid from Minnesota, and he's just stable up there. You know, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes, safety first. He's getting a little bit more aggressive with respect to his offense. The other night, he had a nice he actually beat Andre Vasilevsky with a nice shot from the wing. And I said, oh, you're going to – you know, since the Kings play 11-7, you ever have thought about going up the left wing and play left wing? He goes, I got to be a little bit faster to play the wing. But, yeah, a steady presence, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. A really cerebral player, the type of player – that Drew really likes playing with, because Drew can do his thing and Mike could be reliable. So when Drew goes up the ice, and Drew's had a great offensive season, part of the reason is he can rely and depend on Mikey, because they've been together basically, you know, from the first season that Mikey came up, once he was a rookie, once he established himself, that's been a pair that has been changed. So with all the changes that Jim Hiller does, the one thing he doesn't change is the pair of Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty. They're certainly their top pair.
Mikey Anderson's great. He's very fun to watch. I have to ask, a large story about the Kings on the negative side of things has been the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation. It's taken a bit for him to get going. Kings gave up a lot to the Winnipeg Jets to get him, and then gave him a big ticket. And I don't know that anybody would really say, maybe even Pierre-Luc Dubois himself would say, that he's been playing up to that cap hit so far. What do you see from this player that maybe other people aren't seeing, or is there a sign of a turnaround coming for this guy, or, you know, is there some larger concern here?
Yeah, well, the first 40 games was bad, right? There was lack of intensity. There was a lot of things just, you know, it's funny. It's the style of player, right? When you have players on this team like Blake Lizotte or Trevor Moore, who give every ounce of energy on every shift, and you have Pierre-Luc Dubois, his style is just nonchalant. He's not that like energy guy. He's big, he's skilled, and they really got him for the playoffs. Like last year when he lost in the playoffs to the Edmonton Oilers, they felt they weren't good enough down the middle. So now with Kopitar that we talked about, Phil Deneau, who's very, you know, a solid 200-foot player, very solid defensively, adding Dubois to that mix, they thought, okay, we can get, you know, because they haven't won a round in the playoffs since they won the Stanley Cup in 2014, which is a long things. The fact that, and you've seen Victor Arvidsson has finally come back. He's had such bad luck with injuries over the last 10 months. That's been a stabilizing force. And if you look at the last month of Pierre-Luc Dubois' game, it's gotten better. He has been better. And better meaning some nights, like, okay, he's not, you know, he's not doing anything, but at least he's not hurting the team, right? He's not lackadaisical. I think the fact that Arvidsson, who's been a vet, who, you know, is a really, you know, a smart playmaker, he's made him better. So you can see that Dubois is trending in the right direction right now with his game, which is vital because, again, the playoffs are on the horizon and they really got him for the playoffs. So you could wipe off the first season. The one hope is that, as you mentioned, they gave up a lot for him. They paid him a lot of money. What you don't want to happen with Pierre-Luc Dubois next season is what's happening with Jonathan Huberdeau in Calgary, right? First year out of Florida, the first year wasn't good in Calgary. And then the second year, he hasn't been productive as well. So maybe Dubois growing into his role. But I think the last month has been much better for him. He's been much more of an impact player. If you watched the game last night, he made a great play to feed Kevin Fiala on the Kings opening goal. So it's been better, but they definitely need him to raise his level when they get to the playoffs if they want to do any damage.
What do you make of Akil Thomas? This is a guy who it's been a long road to try and get to a point where you would even consider this guy for NHL games. Mm-hmm. He had that hat trick in the preseason that had everybody wondering. There was, you know, talk that maybe he'd go down and be the captain of the Ontario Reign. He wears an A for the club now. And now he's on pace to have his best. He's already had his best season in the American Hockey League, but he's on pace to even just shatter those numbers even more. What is it about this kid maybe? And is it maybe like an organizational philosophy? Obviously, you know, Alex Turcotte is another name of somebody that it took a while. Obviously, injuries, you know, played a factor in Alex Turcotte getting an opportunity. But now, you know, you've seen them try and kind of break him in a little bit on the fourth line here and there. About Akil Thomas, though? Like, is this a player that we could expect maybe to see at some point this season or maybe even at the start of next season? Because he's getting up there, too. You know, he's 24 now.
Yeah. Well, a faction of Kings fans want him recalled immediately off that spinorama goal that he had the other night.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't work like that. I think there's one similarity between Akil Thomas and Turcotte is they can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
That's been the barrier to the progression. Now, you know, we just talked about Dubois. The Kings are going to go Kopitar, Deneau, Dubois down the middle. So where does that leave a guy like Akil Thomas? He's probably a fourth-line center on the team next season if he makes it. But, you know, Turcotte's also in that role as well, and you have Blake Lizotte. So there's a logjam. Do you move on from Blake Lizotte? Do you put one of these kids in the deal for, you know, a goaltender? That's the question. So I think his future's uncertain because he has to stay healthy. And with Turcotte, he was finally healthy, and then he banged up his shoulder a week ago, and he's been out of the lineup. He didn't travel with the team on this road trip. So I think with respect to Akil Thomas, he's got the talent. He certainly has the personality and character. They love his character. We've interviewed before on our podcast, Kings of the Podcast. Really smart, good, driven kid. So can he play in this league? Probably. Where's his role? Where does he fit on this team? Probably 4C. And can he stay healthy? So the two questions. So he'll have an opportunity in training camp to make the team, and they'll just take it from there. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops. And if he can make the team, that's going to be, you know, certainly a playoff team, hopefully next season as well.
So I want to get to Thursday night's game in Edmonton and the overall matchup against the Oilers in general. But you mentioned a potential trade for a goaltender. I think a lot of people will point to this Kings team as, you know, obviously Cam Talbot and Dave Riddick have held up a lot better than a lot of people may have given them credence to before the start of the season. But do you think that this is a goaltending tandem that can take them as far as they want to go in the playoffs?
Well, you know, Cam's been there before with Edmonton in the playoffs. And when you look at the stats and the numbers there, what, 9-15, the average 9-15 save percentage, that should be good enough to win in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The question is, will you make big saves in big spots in the playoffs? Like, I'll give you an example. Last year, they made a trade for Korpisalo. He was great down the stretch. And guess what? He couldn't stop the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs. Like, he wasn't good. They had a book on him. They were shooting high the entire series, and you know, he wound up signing a big money deal in Ottawa, and he's played okay. So do I think it's good enough? Yeah. Are we talking about Shesterkin or Vasilevsky or Sorokin in net between the pipes? No, but when you look at the Kings, like, you don't have the top penalty kill in the league if your goaltending isn't good. And a lot of coaches say your best penalty killer has to be your goaltender. It's been good enough. Will we see this tandem next season? No. They will make a trade for a legitimate goaltender. I know there's a lot of speculation about Linus Allmark. Maybe they revisit that. You know, you could look at a Saros who, you know, might be going out in national because Askarov's doing really good in the minor leagues for the Predators. You always look at John Gibson, who's probably needs to move on from Anaheim. There'll be a different goaltender in net next season because they're not going to go and spend $2 million like they did. Look, Rob Blake got valued for $2 million. He's got two guys who are doing the job. Can they do the job in the playoffs? Cam has. Dave Riddick, I'm not sure. I think he would go with Cam, but I've asked him Hiller numerous times about the plan down the stretch, and he basically goes game to game. It's a feel. Like he'll play Talbot a couple games in a row, right? And then he'll play Riddick a couple games in a row. I would suspect game one of the playoffs, Cam Talbot would be an F. It should be good enough. Can they score? Can they not take penalties? Can they play good defense? I don't think goaltending will lose them the playoffs, but it may not win it for them as well.
So great stuff, by the way. So the Kings are in Edmonton on Thursday. Should be a really good game. Those two teams will most likely match up against one another in the playoffs. How do the Kings stack up against the Oilers, and how big of a measuring stick is this game on Thursday for this Kings team?
Well, in the big picture, I've told people, I think the Kings can beat any team in the Pacific Division in the playoffs. The teams they can't beat, like I was in Dallas 2 weeks ago, and they got wiped out by Dallas. I think three games against Dallas, 13-3. They've been outscored 13-3. Same thing with Colorado. Edmonton, there have been three games this season. Edmonton won in a shootout. The Kings won 4-0 at home. And the third game, Edmonton won, but it was 2-2 going to the third. They can play with the Edmonton Oilers. And for all the great things the Oilers have done this season with that massive 16-game winning streak, the Kings have less regulation losses than the Oilers do. So they can play with them. There's no doubt they can play with them. And I think privately, if you talk to players, they want to face them for a third time. It's really hard to beat the same team in the playoffs 3 years in a row. And look, Connor's going to have 100 assists. Zach Hyman, 50 goals. It's a very dangerous team. But they can play with that team without question. If they play, it's going to be a 6 or 7-game series again. Because there's not a lot, like they're different teams, but there's not a lot to separate. If you look at the season series between these two, there's not much to separate these teams. So again, it'll be a long, physical, grueling series. Probably comes down to goaltending. You know, Stuart Skinner isn't the greatest against LA in the playoffs, so it's going to be really interesting. But this might be a little bit of a preview. I'm not sure how much each team's going to show each other in this game because I think they see it as well. They see how it's aligning right now. That it would be Kings and Oilers, but it's always entertaining. The players are motivated, and they also know that. You know, if you look at the playoffs the last couple of years, I think these teams have played like 20 times in the last three seasons. It's definitely a rivalry. It's always great to see Connor McDavid, but again, the Oilers would be favored because they won the last two playoff rounds. But again, it's a toss-up when I think you go in there. You're probably looking at a 6 or 7-game series, but this will be a little preview on Thursday night between the Kings and the Oilers in Edmonton.
Dennis, you were great. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. Everybody go check him out in the fourth period, SiriusXM NHL Radio, and the Kings of the Podcast. Thanks again for doing this. We'll bring you on again soon.
Anytime. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
That is Dennis Bernstein. He is excellent. Wow. That's got to be our Kings guy going forward. I don't know that there are many men or many people that know that team better than that man does. So that was a lot of fun. That was great information, great stuff on a team that, I really feel could make a playoff run. You know, he's very confident, and I agree with that confidence that this team could beat anyone and match up very well against anybody in the Pacific Division. Nathan Chibe mentioned earlier that, the one thing about this Canucks team is that they don't have that playoff experience yet. Same thing with the Oilers. The fact that Dennis mentioned that, these players on Los Angeles on the Kings would love a third go at the Edmonton Oilers. And boy, what madness would that be if the Kings upset the Oilers in a year when the Oilers were supposed to really be contending for the Stanley Cup. But we thank Dennis for coming on. He was really great. Really enjoyed hearing what he had to say about the club that he covers. Everybody go check out his work too. Just really enjoyed that conversation. So we thank him for coming on with us today. Few more things here. Just touch on some of these games here. Detroit Red Wings, Washington Capitals is going to be a very good one. We were talking about the playoff picture, what that looks like. That should be a good matchup and one that is very, very important for the standings. Devils taking on the Leafs. Could Austin Matthews hit 60 goals tonight for the second time in his career? Devils are very hot, though, recently. We will see if they can keep that momentum going and try and make things interesting in the last 10 or so games here the rest of the way. Vegas also in Nashville taking on the Preds. One of the hottest teams, if not the hottest team in the National Hockey League right now, is the Nashville Predators. So you have your two Western Conference wild card matchup teams there. And you have to have a feeling that if Vegas wins in Nashville tonight, second half of a back-to-back, that might be it for the Western Conference playoffs. We might know our eight teams. We might already know our eight teams. I know St. Louis is going to try and make it. That was a tough loss for them yesterday. But even still, you have to imagine that we know our eight teams. And even if, or especially if the Vegas Golden Knights get the win tonight, we will know that. And then the Oilers and the Jets, that's probably going to be the game of the night for myself. I will be really enjoying that one. You know, we talked a little bit about the Oilers here, Jets too, both teams on a bit of a slide recently. Jets were out East, had some troubles, in the handling some of those Metro Division opponents. And, you know, now they'll host the best player in the world right now too, who's coming off, back-to-back losses on the weekend. The local team here will, local team here will take on the Calgary Flames tonight at the United Center. And that will be the last home game here for a little bit. The Hawks are going to hit the road after that. And then just a few other matchups. So that is the hockey for the evening. Flyers will also take on the New York Rangers tonight. That will be a good one as well. John Tortorella going up against his former squad. And then we mentioned the Hurricanes taking on the Penguins, Jake Gensel's return, and the Bruins, Panthers. That is a very good one on deck. Go listen on the gravel if you haven't already. We're going to wrap things up here for the day. We're up against the clock. And we thank Nathan Chibe for coming on. Thanks to Dennis Bernstein. Go check out both of their work. They are doing excellent jobs at covering hockey, just covering the sport. Go watch On the Gravel on YouTube, too. Thanks for listening this morning. Leave 5 stars. Leave a review. Leave comments. You know, do anything you can and share this around. And we appreciate everybody for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of your day. Enjoy the hockey tonight.